Hello, my name is Phyllis, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Phyllis!
Thank you. Wow. You know, as I stand here, I am gaining strength in my nervousness, or experiencing my nervousness, strength in my fingertips from grasping the podium, and hope that I will make it through this. Actually, I am truly grateful to be a part of this Adult Children's Festival's journey to serenity through experience, strength, and hope. And I'm honored to be able to share my thoughts on the wonderful theme of this year's festival. I grew up in an alcoholic home. I have an older brother who was sober and in the program for years. He passed away at a young age 3 years ago. And I have a younger brother who, as a result of his experience with drugs, committed suicide in his early 30s. So I definitely have the experience with the disease of alcoholism. I had that before I got to the program. I have been in the program for about 8 years, of course wishing that I had gotten here sooner. It indeed was my experience, but it was my weakness and my lack of hope that finally got me here. Currently I have an alcoholic spouse who is in recovery. I have two beautiful children who have been deeply affected by their experience with the family disease of alcoholism, one of whom you may know, or you may get to know this weekend, the other whom has chosen not to be a part of my life right now. And I have a very beautiful grandson for whom I have hope that I am doing my part to break the cycle of the devastating effects of the disease of alcoholism. When I reflect on experience, my heart fills with emotion. I go way back to my experience as that sad, lonely little girl, looking for love, constantly seeking approval, and striving to be accepted. I feel the pain of broken promises, of never being good enough. I feel the fear of abandonment. In my experience as a young adult, I feel the anxiety of striving for perfection, of walking on eggshells, of trying to keep people happy, of always being responsible. As a wife and mother, I feel the guilt and shame of not being that perfect wife, of not being that very good parent. And before I bottomed out, I recall that sickening feeling of low self-esteem, of not liking myself. On the other hand, I'm so grateful to reflect on my experience of recovery. Again, my heart fills with emotion. I have experienced love, understanding, acceptance, and worthiness through you people in these rooms. I have experienced peace, serenity, freedom, and a new way of life through the steps and traditions and slogans. I have particularly experienced strength or healing through the steps. Steps 1, 2, and 3 reminding me that I don't have to do it alone. I have my higher power who knows me better than I know myself, who has a plan for me and who is always there for me. If I could always remember that, I still quite often try to do it alone. Steps 4 through 7 allowing me to discover who I am, what my part is in the disease of alcoholism, what I need to do for myself. The opportunity to experience a new way of life, free from past chaos and turmoil. Steps 8 and 9, allowing me to experience forgiveness, reconciliation, and in some aspects, new relationships. Steps 10 through 12, always given me that second chance to clear my slate and to practice my experience with the first 9 steps. I particularly remember my a step 10 experience, and thank you, Magdalena, for sharing your step 10 experience. I was in a conflict with an alcoholic in my life, and I knew that I had treated that alcoholic poorly and I was wrong. By promptly admitting that I was wrong and saying that, I'm sorry, a heavy weight was lifted from my heart. And you know, it also was the difference between experiencing isolation, guilt, and tension in my life for the next hour, days, or even weeks, and the immediate relief from making that admission that I was wrong and saying I'm sorry. As well, I remember my experience in a 12-step situation during a conflict with an alcoholic in my life. The phone rings and the caller is my sponsor, who is on her way to a meeting, and she invites me to join her. You know, what a way to be taken out of that conflict. Boy, was I looked after. You know, for me, that's one of those spiritual ahs or ahas or whatever, you know. I am okay with the experiences of my childhood. They have been incorporated with the many wonderful experiences that I have on my journey to serenity. They are part of me. They are what got me here, and they are what keep me here. They have taught me many lessons, and I embrace the opportunity for new experiences so that the path on my journey is filled with love and learning. I won't tell you how old I am, but I've never been in an airplane. I'm claustrophobic, and it just wasn't for me. I must tell you, though, that I have a flight booked to Arizona in February, so... Tune in next year for the tale of that near experience. You know, and I am also reminded of the saying that experience is the best teacher. I need to go to meetings and listen to your experiences. I learn so much from your experiences. When I reflect on strength, I am reminded of that reading from Hope for Today, where when on a walk through the forest, the writer picks up rocks that represent negative things and puts them in his knapsack. Soon the beauty of the forest is forgotten and the weight of the knapsack is just overwhelming. That was me. And I believe we adult children are strong because we have carried that heavy knapsack and we have survived. So although that knapsack was heavy and my strengths prior to the program weren't necessarily healthy, they carried me through to recovery. And I must admit that I had become very weak when I finally walked through the doors of recovery. My strength develops through support, respect, and encouragement of you people in these rooms. My strength comes from my struggles. I learn so much when I'm struggling. I learn new strengths, and I get to practice and hone my already learned strengths. No matter how painful the experience of the struggle, and no matter how much I would much rather not be there, I need to remind myself that I will come out the other side with new awareness, and I will have developed new strengths from that struggle. I receive a lot of strength from my sponsor. She believes in me. She has confidence in me, and she gives me the nudges that I need to develop and be aware of my inner strength. Becoming stronger is a process for me. It's like Magdalena talked about, is peeling the layers off that onion and discovering who I am and what I need to do to take care of myself. It's discovering what is not my business. It's setting boundaries. It's realizing that no is a complete sentence. It's being able to own my own power. And it's acknowledging that I'm human. It's not being afraid to make mistakes. It's being gentle with myself. It's being able to love myself. What a phenomenon. What an ideal. What a transformation. Thanks to the tools of the program, I have developed an inner quietness and confidence, which I know I can depend on to be strong enough to see me through most anything. Sometimes it is difficult for me to tap into that quietness and confidence, but in my heart, I know that it's there. I love our Hope for Today daily reader. This was my very first experience with any sense of hope. I wanted this book. I phoned the literature supplier and I asked if they had a copy of the book, Hope for Tomorrow. The gentleman on the other end of the telephone quietly said to me, he says, hey, I can do better than that. He says, I can give you hope for today. You know, it's just sort of ironic to be able to remember that. Our opening says no situation is really hopeless, that it is possible to find contentment and even happiness. I remember hearing that when I first came to the program, and I remember clinging to those words. For when I came through these doors, I had totally given up hope. I remember my first meeting, and the people were laughing. My first reaction was that these people aren't taking this program stuff very seriously. You see, I had forgotten how to laugh. But I remember the gradual feeling of hope that I felt from hearing laughter and from seeing the peace, serenity, and happiness in you people at those meetings, and I wanted some of that. And I remember my first belly laugh, and I remember that first glimpse of peace, serenity, and happiness. How did it happen? How was it possible for me to progress from that broken, quiet little lump in the chair to a person who was too experienced to hope, to believe that my life could be so much different? I don't know. For me, it was a belief in that hope. Also, the idea in step two that a higher power can restore me to sanity is a great source of hope for me. I know that there is help out there for me. I received the gift of hope through the promises, and I love those bookmarks that you have for us here this weekend. Who would have thought that my fears could be replaced with courage and faith, that I could be free to delight in life's awe? You know, before I got to the program, I didn't realize the grass was green and the sky was blue. I didn't know how to live life. My life is so enriched by the promise of hope that I received through the tools of the program. Without help, I would not have strength. Without strength, I would not be able to embrace my experience. In closing, I would like to say that I look forward to increasing my experience, building my strength, and enhancing my hope through the presentations, sharings, and fellowship of this week's Journey to Serenity. Thank you for allowing me to share.
One of my defects of character is that I just love being right. And that felt pretty right. Yeah, my bride's. Yeah, that's a real problem for him. Our next speaker is someone that is kind of like a fixture at these festivals. I mean, every one of these that I've been at, he's been at, and he's just this kind of calm, quiet presence, and you don't notice that he's here, but you notice when he's not here, is the experience that I have. He's also his home group is the Al-Anon group with, I think, the coolest name of them all. He's one of the core members of the Fake It Till You Make It Al-Anon family group in Swift Current, and I'd like to call James up to share.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for having me, inviting me up here. My name is James. I am a very grateful member of Al-Anon Adult Children.
Hi, James.
There it is. You know, I've been up here. I don't know how many years. Like Richard said, I think I've been to every single one of these things, and I still brace myself for that every time. What a great community. You know, the other day when Richard phoned and asked me to do this, I stopped and I thought about it, and I agreed to do it. But I was thinking about what I was going to talk about, it wasn't always that way. It wasn't all that long ago that when if something like this would happen, I would be immediately, oh yes, sir, oh yes, I would at anything, whatever you ask, I'll do. And it wasn't because I legitimately wanted to do anything. It was about me manipulating to feel appreciated. Me manipulating to get my needs met. Because like everybody else in this room, I come by my program honestly. And I grew up around alcoholism. I grew up around rage. I grew up around codependency. And my experience led me to believe that who I am and what I have to offer in this world wasn't good enough. And so, unconsciously, I learned tools to survive in that scenario. I learned how to manipulate to try and get my needs met. It wasn't safe psychologically to express what I really wanted, how I really felt. I learned most predominantly to stuff down the real me. And what that meant was, over time, as I'm sure you all are aware, growing resentments and emotions popping out at inappropriate places, and it was just survival tactic out of fear. And so that was normal for me, and I didn't understand that there was any other way. That was the way I saw the world, was in order for all of us to get our needs met, that's what we have to do. We have to lie, manipulate, trick people, con people. I have to step down who I am authentically and pretend to be somebody else. And whatever that was in that given situation, that's where I needed to be. And so, like I've heard this morning, Magdalene talking about rescuing other people. And it had nothing to do with you. I didn't authentically want to help anybody. All I really wanted was to try and get that need met. And so by the time I was in my early 20s, I'd done everything I could to try and achieve the hope I had for myself at the time. But oddly enough, the stuffing, the resenting, the stealing my friend's cars, the breaking into other people's buildings, like, that stuff, oddly enough, wasn't working for me. And so one night, I'm a musician, as many of you know. One night I was up in Saskatoon here, actually, for some music thing, and I was singing at a friend of a friend's anyway, and I woke up in the middle of the night, well, this guy's upstairs, and he's yelling, he's swearing, he's throwing stuff around and screaming, it's just out of his mind. And I was terrified, really, really terrified for my physical safety. But what really happened that night was that I recognized how tired I was of being afraid. I was so afraid to take care of myself, to do what I needed to do for me. And I had no answers. Anyway, the next night, I was leaving Saskatoon, is what I consider to be my bottom, and I hadn't cried or expressed any sort of genuine emotion in, I don't know how many years. And I mean that literally, years probably, 3 years. Anyway, so that night, my way home, it's this time of the year, actually, it was in October, and I just started crying. And I wasn't a spiritual person, I wasn't a religious person, but I said, you know what, God, you got the wheel because I got nothing left. And I meant it. I had nothing left. And I didn't know what God was. I didn't even know if I was using the right words. But I knew that I meant it, and because I just had nothing left, I had no direction left. And I was, how many of us talk about being emotionally bankrupt, spiritually bankrupt, and that's where I was. And I started to cry, and immediately as I did that, I just let go. I just let go. Not the steering wheel, thankfully, but I mean of everything else, everything else that really mattered, you know? All the stuff that I've been clinging to. And I just felt this big ball of, use your own words, float up. And that night I sat at the intersection of Rosetown there. And I had no idea where I was going to go. And I felt like, when you're talking about with the, like I felt like a little baby. And I was feeling feelings that I didn't know how to explain what was happening. But I felt like I was going to be okay. Like all of a sudden I felt this connection to something bigger than me. And this guy drives by. It's the guy I always wanted to be, right? He's this guy in the fancy half-ton truck with the loud mufflers driving by real slow, listening to the fancy stereo system with his girlfriend sitting right beside him. It was the guy I always wanted to be. And I thought, if I could be that guy, then I'll be happy. So I'm sitting there in the hood of my car having my mental breakthrough, and drinking Gatorade, and I realize I realized that it was all BS. It was all bullshit. Like, all of these things that I've been doing just, and all I ever really wanted was to just be loved for who I was. That's it. And I all of a sudden just got all the games I've been playing and all these false attempts at trying to just feel appreciated and valued. And that led me to going to a friend, a program friend, oddly enough, who's an addictions counselor, and started coming to meetings, and there was all these old people in their 30s and 40s talking about my life. And they were laughing about the craziest things. And didn't they understand how much pain I was in? Didn't they understand how much it hurt to, you know, lose friends because steal their vehicles? Anyway, but they did understand, and that was the thing. You know, I think I was maybe 22 at the time, 21, somewhere in there, and I thought, you know, I'm probably going to live maybe another 50 years or more, and I felt like I was going crazy, and it wasn't, you know, the things weren't looking good. Like, 50 years of this was not good, so I became willing to do anything to find my way out of losing my mind, and that's exactly what it felt like. Now, I think it was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. And I think it was total higher power directed. And yeah, so I ended up going to meetings, and they said, you get a sponsor. And so I did get a sponsor because I was willing to do whatever it took to not go back to that place. And I was willing to try anything. So they said, get a sponsor. And so as terrified as I was, I went for coffee with somebody whose program that I really valued. And I sat there humming and hawing and fiddling with my cup. And finally, after about 20 minutes of this, they just leaned across the table and said, are you trying to ask me to be your sponsor? And I went, yes, that's exactly what I'm trying to do. And they said, well, I would be happy to. And that was a very, very meaningful experience. I probably cried for the first 3 months because I hadn't acknowledged this part of me in I don't know how long. And that's the gift that recovery has given to me, is that, I didn't remember what Phyllis said something about nature and whatever. Well, it felt to me like my whole life somebody had been telling me that the sun comes up in the west. It comes up in the west, James. And the sooner you understand that, the better off you'll be. And then I come to meetings, and all of a sudden I realize it comes up in the east. And what was normal for me all of a sudden became abnormal. And so, through working the steps, sponsorship, daring to embrace service work, and then daring to let it go, because they're both equally important, has taught me to embrace the unusual. That normal isn't always a good thing. And in fact, I had a sponsor once in Vancouver tell me, that, you know, we're having a normal reaction to an abnormal situation. And this really the gift, this really the hope. The recovery doesn't take away the problems. It doesn't take away, but it helps to give me, I get perspective. I get perspective in here about me in this situation, in the now. And my connection with my higher power, and we work together to grow and embrace the abnormal. Which I've quickly come to believe over these years is healthy. So I think I'm out of time already. But for a kid like me to come from where I am, to be able to be grateful and to genuinely feel like who I am and what I have, who I am and what I'm about is good enough in this world, it is a miracle. And I've heard people over the years say, well, I don't know where I'd be without the program. And I, quite frankly, there's been lots of times where I thought, well, it was drama. But it's true, you know, like I don't want to, I think about it sometimes. I really think about what would I be doing. And it doesn't take me long, and I don't want to go down that road. I don't want to think about that. Because the gratitude and the unconditional love and acceptance I get in these rooms is my permission to embrace problems rather than try and manipulate my way through them. To choose health over dysfunction, even though the problems don't, they just change. Anyway, so I think I'll just end there, but thank you so much for having me, and just, you know, thanks for being here. This festival just really is such an important part of my recovery journey, especially the crazy dancing later on. Anyway, thank you so much for asking me.
Our next speaker is, again, someone that is closely connected with someone who's become real important to me. And as a result of that, I kind of get an indirect perspective on the changes in her life. And we don't tell people what to do here. We make suggestions. And three of the suggestions that are really kind of core is if we talk to people about go to the meetings, get a sponsor, work the steps. This lady, in my view, is one of the best examples of what happens when someone takes those suggestions. I get to, on a pretty regular basis, hear her talk about the changes in her life and hear that verified from another source. And I get to watch her sponsoring women these days and carrying a message of hope to someone who still needs it. And it's a real beautiful thing to watch. And I'd like to call my friend Kim up to share.
Where's Karen's box that she used to stand on?
13 steps.
I wasn't sure that was going to be my name at the end of that. But I'm Kim, a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Kim.
It was 3 years ago that I came to my first Al-Anon meeting at this very conference, very festival. And so I love coming back here. It reminds me of where I was and where I am and all the great things that Al-Anon has done for me. I'm not one of those people who came to Al-Anon and cried all the time, but I feel like today I might get 8 minutes of crying in front of you. One of the things I like about Al-Anon is you come as you are. And Al-Anon has done so much for me. The first time I came here, Gord had started a program about 3 months earlier, and I could see that it was really making a big difference to him, and it was making a difference to us. And so he brought home this information about this festival, and I said, well, that sounds really interesting. The topics sound good, and I wonder if I could go, and I don't want to cramp your style, you know. And he said, well, it's open to everybody. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I qualify for Al-Anon. Like, I don't have, and my mom and dad didn't drink, and you don't drink. And he's like, well, it's open to everybody. You can come and see. So I kind of felt like I might come and get booted because I wouldn't meet that qualifications. But Richard, who can sense a newcomer from a mile away, said, well, I understand your father-in-law drank. And I'm like, well, yeah, but he passed away. Well, what did he pass away from? Well, complications from drinking. And okay. Is anyone else in your family? Do you know anyone else who's an alcoholic? Well, my dad's brother is a bootlegger, was a bootlegger, and he died from alcoholism alone. And my aunt and uncle, another one of his sisters and her husband, they're alcoholics, and she's in rehab a lot, and we're kind of waiting for her to die. And my mom's sister's husband is an alcoholic, and he lives in a trailer and doesn't know who he is or who anyone is anymore, so we're waiting for him to die. Well, he said, I think you could come. And at that first festival, Karen gave her talk, and I really related, and she said that she was went to Friday Good Morning Group, and I thought, well, Friday mornings is good for me. I'll go try that out. And then it's the same thing everyone else says. There's a whole bunch of women saying things that reflected my life totally. And when I started talking about different things in my life, and, you know, for one of the things was that we moved a lot as a married couple, trying to make things better all the time, and they said, oh, that's a geographic cure. I'm like, oh. And then they said, well, so is your husband still drinking? I'm like, well, no, he doesn't hardly drink at all. And so I found out then, again, about adult children of alcoholics. And I thought, that's the checklist that when we go through that, I'm like, okay, you know, like, my parents aren't alcoholics, but there's something going on here. And I always knew something was going on that wasn't quite right, kind of weird, but I never knew what it was. And when I got to an adult children meeting, I was like, this is what's going on here. And I found out that's called the family disease of alcoholism. And the different things I experienced that I just didn't, that kept me off balance all the time, kept me guessing and trying so hard, were the effects of alcoholism that just trickled down generation after generation from person to person. And I realized that my parents, that my mom had a grandparent that was an alcoholic, and my dad, I think his mother was probably an alcoholic, and that they were basically kids in an adult body trying to have a family and have a normal life, and they didn't know what was going on. Their life was falling apart all the time, and it shouldn't be, and they didn't know why. And that's the family disease of alcoholism. And they were trying their best, but they're crazy. And that's the best they could do. But I think realizing that just took away, even just that took a weight off me. That idea that I did the best I could, they did the best they could. And we just keep on doing that. And like Richard said, I was desperate when I got here. He didn't say that part, but I think it was implied. And so when they said, here's what you got to do, do this, do that, do this, one of my strengths/defects from being raised in an family with these issues is that if you tell me to do those things, I'll do them because I want to do the right thing. And in this case, that really worked for me. I started to just suck up whatever I could to get better, to figure out what was going on, and to grab some sanity and some serenity. And I think, you know, it's having that extra sort of a toolbox with me all the time, and having a higher power that's with me all the time. And last night, you know, I kind of been spending some time thinking about this talk and what kind of things I want to talk about. But, you know, really there's no point being organized because life is just keeps coming at you. Last night at 3 o'clock in the morning, my 26-year-old son phoned, and he's flown from his house. He's been battered, and he's crying. And I asked my higher power to help me, and Gordon's there, and we did good on the phone. And when the call finished, I had that feeling I had when I started, that constant shaking, that stomach ache. But I'd had that feeling for 35 years, maybe. And when I walked in here at 9:30, it was gone. It was done. And last night, I could tell I was starting to assess. Like, I wasn't at home, I was with my son. And it was like, okay, that's not my part. You know, let that go. And I thought, I met Cheryl on a Friday. She came for coffee with us. And she told me she had phoned her sponsor one time at 3 in the morning. And I thought, okay, if I really need to phone somebody, Cheryl will understand I can phone. So I had people there. I did the serenity prayer. That's my number one go-to, try to calm myself down. And then I still couldn't sleep But I thought, I'm not going to waste time worrying because it doesn't help. My first tool that I grabbed in Al-Anon was Just for Today. And I said today was too long, so I would do Just for Now. Like, am I okay right now? Yeah, I'm okay right now. I'm at home. I'm safe. Justin's home. He's safe. He's had his friends safe. It's okay right now. And that got me calmed down. Then I just go to the steps, and I start at number one until I can go on to two and go on to three. And I do it again if I have to, and I stick with that. And then I just asked if I could rest, ask my higher power to just rest with me. I just need some rest. And I didn't think I'd be able to sleep, but I found now I don't have insomnia anymore like I used to, but when it comes, I don't fight it. I just say, what should I do? Sometimes I write, sometimes I drink tea, sometimes I just rest. And I think if I just rest, I'll still feel better in the morning. And so that's what I did, and then I fell asleep. And it wasn't really a peaceful sleep, but it was sleep. And in the morning I woke up, and again, it's the same thing. I have tools. I know I'm coming to a group of people who I don't have to say, I'm having a great day. Oh yeah, everything's fine, right? And a group of people, when I say, my son called in the middle of the night because he's getting battered by his girlfriend, or that's some crazy shit. I'm out of here. It's a perfect combination. So it just keeps me going. And I think that's, for me, just the constant gift of Al-Anon, that no matter what is coming up in life, I have people, I have skills, I have tools. Instead of just running around like a chicken with my head cut off, trying to please this person, that person, what should I do? I can try and stay centered with my step 11, keep contact with my higher power, and know I have people here that can be my higher power's messenger for comfort and for messages of hope for me. And, you know, Gord reminded me last night, too, that Justin has a higher power of his own, our son, and that, you know, he's been deteriorating in the progressive illness of the family disease of alcoholism. And God's got to get his attention, and it sometimes is harsh, just like it was for us. And so we keep hoping that his higher power will guide him where he needs to go for help and for healing. My last little story is going to be from last summer, about my higher power. I've been in the program, I've been going great, and I've been feeling a lot better, and I've been doing that 6, 7, you know, just trying to get that feeling, praying for and asking, humbly asking for things to change, for me to be healed. And my younger son, Ben, who's 11, and I got caught in a tornado out by Maymont. And we prayed our butts off. But I was like, I am powerless. Like, you can't do anything about a tornado, right? You're stuck. It's our higher power's will, whatever's going to happen. And when it stopped, it just whirled around and it lifted up and it was perfectly clear blue sky afterwards. And I felt like at that same time, my insides had been scoured and everything had just been whooshed, lifted. And I just thought, wow, what a miracle. Like, we lived through a tornado, and that's how it is. Life can be a whirlwind, and then it's blue sky. So, thanks for everything going on, and all of you.
She makes me cry. Our last speaker is someone who is relatively new to this fellowship. Haven't seen her in a while because she's been going to other meetings, but a couple of weeks back, she showed up at New Awareness Al-Anon Family Group, which is one of the meetings that I attend on a weekly basis. It's my bride's home group. And the new awareness group on the last meeting of the month, it's the custom of that group that we do a meeting on steps 1, 2, and 3. And I listened to this young lady break down those three steps with a clarity and a passion that was absolutely inspiring. And I couldn't not invite her to be here today. And with that, I'd like to call Rochelle up to share.
Hi, everybody. I'm really nervous, so I apologize if I'm a little bit shaky. My name is Rochelle, and I'm a recovered member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Rochelle!
And I say I'm recovered because I was at a place once, which I would say is called a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I'm going to explain my experience with the steps and the strength that they've given me through working them and the hope that I have that my life will continue to change the more I practice this program in my life. I found an illustration that I thought aptly fit where I was a couple months ago. It was an illustration of this actor who was in a play who was continuously trying to run the whole show. He was trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players to fit what he wanted the show to look like. And if only his arrangements would stay put, everything would turn out wonderful. But what usually happens in that scenario? The show doesn't come off so well. This illustration continues to explain that because of this person's arrangements not turning out so well, they become angry, indignant, self-pitying, and self-destructive. And this was me. I became the victim of the delusion that if I wrested satisfaction and happiness out of this world, if only I managed well. And I really love this illustration, and it fit me so personally because it was very honest. It said that in sometimes in this person trying to do this, they were virtuous, kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. But wasn't the problem that this actor was really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? And this is exactly what happened to me. My show didn't turn out so well. Just a little history. Both my grandfathers were alcoholics. Neither my parents drank when I lived at home. But both of them were raised in families where they learned coping and behavior skills that were passed down to me that aren't necessarily appropriate or healthy. So, although my parents never drank in front of me, they learned these ways of behavior and passed them down to me. Didn't work out so well with my family. I was kicked out / left at 14, and I took these tools that I had learned at home that didn't work there and tried to use them in the real world. And I'm not going to go too into depth of what happened to me because I really want to focus on how I'm doing my steps because that's what's really working for me to get better. But there are a few things that I have to mention. I've had many unhealthy relationships in my life, most with habitual drug and alcohol users, because as an unhealthy, diseased person, I was attracted to unhealthy, diseased people. I have been hurt and abused, and in turn have hurt and abused many other people. Now I'm very fortunate to be married to a wonderful man who I've been with for 6 years, two of them married, and he's wonderful. He is a drinker, and that has caused its problems, but you know, I'm with these steps working through not blaming anybody for my reactions and actions. Now what brought me to my bottom wasn't one of the many intense, event-filled, crazy nights that I've had with the drinkers in my life. There was no vomit or piss or shit that I had to clean up. It was actually a pretty okay night. Like, it was eventful. There was booze involved and the power that it has affected over my life and drinkers in my life. But it did pan out okay. I manipulated the situation that it turned out all right. But the difference was the way I woke up that morning. And I felt so soulless, and I really didn't want to live anymore. And it was like I didn't want to kill myself, because that would have been too much effort. Like, I just wished I wouldn't have woke up. Like, it would have been okay with me. Like, I would have been totally fine with that. And at that moment, I knew that I could not continue living the way I was living, and I needed to find something to make me better. I was completely beaten. I was powerless and empty. And there's this gentleman's story that the way he described his bottom fits so perfectly with how I felt. He said, "I knew from that moment on that I had an alcoholic mind. For me, this was, I knew at that moment that I had a diseased, sick mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange blank spots. For me, I saw at this moment that my self-knowledge and will was not running the show correctly, and I was sick. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow." This was how I felt at this moment. It was a crushing blow to realize that all these things I had been doing my whole life were not working, and I was sick, and I was just leading myself into chaos. So at that moment, I knew I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable. And I have a really amazing sponsor who's helping me through the steps that told me, "You know, Rochelle, the only difference from the alcoholic and those that have been affected by the disease of alcoholism is the physical allergy to alcohol. The insanity and the mental obsession, the way this disease affects our perception and the way we act in an insane way, it's the same. We have the exact same disease." And it's funny because an alcoholic, once they stop drinking, they realize that it was their life problems, and it manifested itself in the way they drank. That's where it kind of came apparent. Same with a member who's been affected by the disease of alcohol and Al-Anon. My sickness and my disease way of life came out in the way alcohol affected those around me and me trying to control it. So I was powerless over alcohol. So I got connected with my sponsor in the next few days because I was done, I was broken, and I was like, I need to get something going. I'd been in this program for in and out for a couple years, and something wasn't working, and it was because I wasn't working it. And I was damn ready now to start getting my life better. I cannot live like that anymore. So he said to me, "Okay, you need to explain to me what step one means to you." And I told him that I've realized I'm completely powerless over alcohol, and the power that this alcohol had over the drinker in my life, and my life has become unmanageable because I've been under the delusion that somehow I can influence the effects of this powerful substance. Isn't that sick? That's like totally not even anything to do with me, but somehow I think I can influence it. So he told me that he felt that I understood step one, and that by coming here this willing to do the work, I had already done my step two. He said, "That's all you need. You just need to be willing and you can move on." And I was so grateful to find out this, because at this point I didn't have any other qualities. But I was willing. I was beaten and I was willing. So then he told me that I had to do my step three, and I had to make a decision to turn my life over to a God of my understanding. And this step I did with my best friend. She is a member of AA, and so she's a very understanding person and knew the value of what I was doing. She made me explain to her and show her that I understand what my problem had been. I understood that it was selfishness, I told her, and I had to show her that I was thoroughly convinced that any life run on self-will could hardly be a success. I told her that I was affected by the disease of alcoholism and couldn't manage my own life, that probably no human power could have relieved me of my diseased way of living, and that I was thoroughly convinced that God would and could if I sought Him. So after she could see that I was genuinely sincere, that I understood what I had to do, we got down on our knees together in her garage, and we bowed our heads, and I prayed to the God of my understanding at that time, out loud, without reservation. I basically explained to Him really simply in a short prayer that I was ready to stop playing Him, and I was ready to turn my life and will over to Him and let Him take the reins. And that was it. It was pretty simple. I didn't feel any immediate thing from it. But after I took that step, slowly things started changing to me. I've had a few experiences now that I'm in a position to help people. One of my bosses, who I thought didn't like me very much, I actually was booking off this convention, and she was like, "Oh, what do you need the weekend off for?" And I just said, "Well, I'm attending a thing that's a support group, so to speak, for families with alcoholics or addicts in their life." And she just was like, "Really? My husband's, she's suffering with the effects of her husband's addiction. That's a really hard one." And I was just amazed, because As soon as I made this decision to turn my life over, the God of my understanding has given me so many opportunities to share what I have and give that away, and that's essentially the 12th step, and I just feel so privileged. So then I had to start my step four. I had 1 week to do this. My sponsor said I had to do a personal house cleaning and to get rid of myself of all the sickness that I had acquired. I had to be honest, thorough. So I made a list of all my resentments. In my whole life, I had over 150 names, which shows why I'm pretty sick. And then I had to go back through the list, and I had to write beside each person what was the cause of my resentment. And then I went over again, and I wrote how what this affected in my life. Why did it make me scared? Was it my self-esteem, my security, my sex? Like, what was it that was making me so resentful? And then after this, I went back through, and I completely disregarded the other person and tried to look for my part in it, because I know that this is not about what other people have done to me. This is about me. I had to find where I was selfish, dishonest, frightened. And this process took me 3 days to go through my resentments. Then I had to go over my fears and do the same examination. And then lastly, I looked at my sex conduct and looked for where I was selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate and manipulative. Who did I hurt and what should I have done? And after all this, when I finished my step four, I prayed for God to help shape my ideals and so that I can move on and be a healthier person. So once I completed my step four, I sent it away to my sponsor so he could help me do my step five. Unfortunately, my sponsor lives in Texas, so he hasn't gotten my step four yet. So I was really hoping to be done my step five so I could have some more to share with you, but that's not possible. So that's okay. This is where I am. So I can't comment any further on the steps, but I can tell you what it is like now compared to a month ago, that bleak, dark place I was. Through working these steps, I have learned, digested, and swallowed some big chunks of truth about myself. In short, I have learned why I have lived in the chaos that I have created for so long. But through working this program, I have learned how to set healthy and reasonable boundaries. I have learned how to control my reactions. I'm starting to accept all the things I can't change, and I'm gaining courage to change the things I can, my actions and reactions. And I'm gaining serenity from this wisdom of knowing the difference. My life hasn't changed that much physically. My husband still drinks, and that's okay. But my life and my perception of my life is leaps and bounds different. I have tools that I never had. I know a new freedom. I have a serenity and peace that I've never had. I have a relationship with a God who helps me get through everything. I'm just so much happier now than I used to be, and it's all because of these 12 steps in this program. I am just such a grateful member of Al-Anon. And to close, I'm just going to relate back to this one gentleman's story because I think it closes really well to what I feel. Fred says, quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. I've since been brought into a way of living infinitely more satisfying and, I hope, more useful than the life I lived before. My old manner of life was by no means a bad one, but I would not exchange its best moments for the worst I have now. I would not go back to it even if I could. Thank you.
I love that energy and that enthusiasm. It's just infectious. Let's have, if we could, one more round of applause for all four of our speakers. I'd like to remind you that the tapes from these sessions are available for purchase over here at the table from Randy and Terry, and that includes the 4x10s and the workshops.